The Crystal Egg by H.G. Wells, an Adult Brain audiobook production read to you by Graham Dunlop. There was, until a year ago, a little and very grimy-looking shop near Seven Dials, over which, in weather-worn yellow lettering, the name of C, Cave, Naturalist, and Dealer in Antiquities was inscribed. The contents of its window were curiously variegated. They comprised some elephant tusks and an imperfect set of chessmen, beads and weapons, a box of eyes, two skulls of tigers and one human, several moth-eaten stuffed monkeys, one holding a lamp, an old-fashioned cabinet, a fly-blown ostrich egg or so, some fishing tackle, and an extraordinary dirty, empty glass fish tank. There was also, at the moment the story begins, a mass of crystal worked into the shape of an egg and brilliantly polished. And at that, two people who stood outside the window were looking, one of them a tall, thin clergyman, the other a black-bearded young man of dusky complexion and unobtrusive costume. The dusky young man spoke with eager gesticulation and seemed anxious for his companion to purchase the article. While they were there, Mr. Cave came into his shop, his beard still wagging with the bread and butter of his tea. When he saw these men and the object of their regard, his countenance fell. He glanced guiltily over his shoulder and softly shut the door. He was a little old man with pale face and peculiar watery blue eyes. His hair was a dirty gray, and he wore a shabby blue frock coat, an ancient silk hat, and carpet slippers very much down at heel. He remained watching the two men as they talked. The clergyman went deep into his trouser pocket, examined a handful of money, and showed his teeth in an agreeable smile. Mr. Cave seemed still more depressed when they came into the shop. The clergyman, without any ceremony, asked the price of the crystal egg. Mr. Cave glanced nervously towards the door leading into the parlor and said, £5. The clergyman protested that the price was high, to his companion as well as to Mr. Cave. It was, indeed, very much more than Mr. Cave had intended to ask when he had stocked the article, and an attempt at bargaining ensued. Mr. Cave stepped to the shop door and held it open. £5 is my price, he said, as though he wished to save himself the trouble of unprofitable discussion. As he did so, the upper portion of a woman's face appeared above the blind in the glass upper panel of the door leading into the parlor, and stared curiously at the two customers. £5 is my price, said Mr. Cave with a quiver in his voice. The swarthy young man had so far remained a spectator watching Cave keenly. Now he spoke. Give him £5, he said. The clergyman glanced at him to see if he were in earnest, and when he looked at Mr. Cave again, he saw that the latter's face was white. It's a lot of money, said the clergyman, and diving into his pocket began counting his resources. He had little more than 30 shillings, and he appealed to his companion, with whom he seemed to be on terms of considerable intimacy. This gave Mr. Cave an opportunity of collecting his thoughts, and he began to explain in an agitated manner that the crystal was not, as a matter of fact, entirely for sale. His two customers were naturally surprised at this and inquired why he had not thought of that before he began to bargain. Mr. Cave became confused, but he stuck to his story that the crystal was not in the market that afternoon, that a probable purchaser of it had already appeared. The two, treating this as an attempt to raise the price still further, made as if they were to leave the shop. But at this point, the parlor door opened and the owner of the dark fringe and the little eyes appeared. She was a coarse-featured, corpulent woman, younger and very much larger than Mr. Cave. She walked heavily and her face was flushed. "That crystal is for sale," she said. "And £5 is a good enough price for it. I can't think what you're about, Cave. Not to take the gentleman's offer." Mr. Cave, greatly perturbed by the eruption, looked angrily at her over the rims of his spectacles, and without excessive assurance asserted his right to manage his business in his own way. An altercation began. The two customers watched the scene with interest and some amusement, occasionally assisting Mrs. Cave with suggestions. Mr. Cave, hard driven, persisted in a confused and impossible story of an inquiry for the crystal that morning, and his agitation became painful. But he stuck to his point with extraordinary persistence. It was the young Oriental who ended this curious controversy. He proposed that they should call again in the course of 2 days, so as to give the alleged inquirer a fair chance. "And then we must insist," said the clergyman. "£5. Mrs. Cave took it on herself to apologize for her husband, explaining that he was sometimes a little odd. And as the two customers left, the couple prepared for a free discussion of the incident in all its bearings. Mrs. Cave talked to her husband with singular directness. The poor little man, quivering with emotion, muddled himself between his stories, maintaining on the one hand that he had another customer in view, and on the other asserting that the crystal was honestly worth 10 guineas. "Why did you ask £5? Said his wife.
"Do let me manage my business my own way," said Mr. Cave.
Mr. Cave had living with him a stepdaughter and a stepson, and at supper that night the transaction was rediscussed. None of them had a high opinion of Mr. Cave's business methods, and this action seemed a culminating folly.
"It's my opinion he's refused that crystal before," said the stepson, a loose-limbed lout of 18.
"But £5, said the stepdaughter, an argumentative young woman of 26.
Mr. Cave's answers were wretched. He could only mumble weak assertions that he knew his own business best. They drove him from his half-eaten supper into the shop to close it for the night, his ears aflame and tears of vexation behind his spectacles. Why had he left the crystal in the window so long? The folly of it. That was the trouble closest in his mind. For a time he could see no way of evading sale. After supper, his stepdaughter and stepson smartened themselves up and went out, and his wife retired upstairs to reflect upon the business aspects of the crystal, over a little sugar and lemon and so forth in hot water. Mr. Cave went into the shop and stayed there until late, ostensibly to make ornamental rockeries for goldfish cases, but really for a private purpose that will be better explained later. The next day, Mrs. Cave found that the crystal had been removed from the window and was lying behind some secondhand books on angling. She replaced it in a conspicuous position, but she did not argue further about it as a nervous headache disinclined her from debate. Mr. Cave was always disinclined. The day passed disagreeably. Mr. Cave was, if anything, more absent-minded than usual, and uncommonly irritable withal. In the afternoon, when his wife was taking her customary sleep, he removed the crystal from the window again. The next day, Mr. Cave had to deliver a consignment of dogfish at one of the hospital schools, where they were needed for dissection. In his absence, Mrs. Cave's mind reverted to the topic of the crystal, and the methods of expenditure suitable to a windfall of £5. She had already devised some very agreeable expedients, among others a dress of green silk for herself and a trip to Richmond, when a jangling and the front door bell summoned her into the shop. The customer was an examination coach who came to complain of the non-delivery of certain frogs asked for the previous day. Mrs. Cave did not approve of this particular branch of Mr. Cave's business, and the gentleman, who had called in a somewhat aggressive mood, retired after a brief exchange of words, entirely civil, so far as he was concerned. Mrs. Cave's eye then naturally turned to the window, for the sight of the crystal was an assurance of the £5 and of her dreams. What was her surprise to find it gone? She went to the place behind the locker on the counter where she had discovered it the day before. It was not there, and she immediately began an eager search about the shop. When Mr. Cave returned from his business with the dogfish about 1:45 in the afternoon, he found the shop in some confusion, and his wife, extremely exasperated and on her knees behind the counter, rooting among his taxidermic material. Her face came up hot and angry over the counter as the jangling bell announced his return, and she forthwith accused him of hiding it.
"Hid what?" asked Mr. Cave.
"The crystal." At that, Mr. Cave, apparently much surprised, rushed to the window. "Isn't it here?" he said. "Great heavens! What has become of it?"
Just then, Mr. Cave's stepson re-entered the shop from the inner room. He had come home a minute or so before Mr. Cave, and he was blaspheming freely. He was apprenticed to a second-hand furniture dealer down the road, but he had his meals at home and he was naturally annoyed to find no dinner ready.
But when he heard of the loss of the crystal, he forgot his meal and his anger was diverted from his mother to his stepfather. Their first idea, of course, was that he had hidden it. But Mr. Cave stoutly denied all knowledge of its fate, freely offering his bedabbled affidavit in the matter. And at last was worked up to the point of accusing first his wife and then his stepson of having taken it with a view to a private sale. So began an exceedingly acrimonious and emotional discussion, which ended for Mrs. Cave in a peculiar nervous condition midway between hysterics and amok, and caused the stepson to be half an hour late at the furniture establishment in the afternoon. Mr. Cave took refuge from his wife's emotions in the shop. In the evening, the matter was resumed with less passion and in a judicial spirit under the presidency of the stepdaughter. The supper passed unhappily and culminated in a painful scene. Mr. Cave gave way at last to extreme exasperation and went out banging the front door violently. The rest of the family, having discussed him with the freedom his absence warranted, hunted the house from garret to cellar, hoping to light upon the crystal. The next day, the two customers called again. They were received by Mrs. Cave almost in tears. It transpired that no one could imagine all that she had stood from Cave at various times in her married pilgrimage. She also gave a garbled account of the disappearance. The clergyman and the Oriental laughed silently at one another and said it was very extraordinary. As Mrs. Cave seemed disposed to give them the complete history of her life, they made to leave the shop. Thereupon, Mrs. Cave, still clinging to hope, asked for the clergyman's address, so that if she could get anything out of Cave, she might communicate it. The address was duly given, but apparently was afterwards mislaid. Mrs. Cave can remember nothing about it. In the evening of that day, the Caves seemed to have exhausted their emotions, and Mr. Cave, who had been out in the afternoon, supped in a gloomy isolation that contrasted pleasantly with the impassioned controversy of the previous days. For some time, matters were very badly strained in the Cave household, but neither crystal nor customer reappeared. Now, without mincing the matter, we must admit that Mr. Cave was a liar. He knew perfectly well where the crystal was. It was in the rooms of Mr. Jacoby Wace, assistant demonstrator at St. Catherine's Hospital, Westbourne Street. It stood on the sideboard, partially covered by a black velvet cloth, and beside a decanter of American whiskey. It is from Mr. Wace, indeed, that the particulars upon which this narrative is based were derived. Cave had taken off the thing to the hospital hidden in the dogfish sack, and there had pressed the young investigator to keep it for him. Mr. Wace was a little dubious at first. His relationship to Cave was peculiar. He had a taste for singular characters, and he had more than once invited the old man to smoke and drink in his rooms, and to unfold his rather amusing views of life in general, and of his wife in particular. Mr. Wace had encountered Mrs. Cave, too, on occasions when Mr. Cave was not at home to attend to him. He knew the constant interference to which Cave was subjected, and having weighed the story judicially, he decided to give the crystal a refuge. Mr. Cave promised to explain the reasons for his remarkable affection for the crystal more fully on a later occasion, but he spoke distinctly of seeing visions therein,
He called on Mr. Wace the same evening. He told a complicated story. The crystal, he said, had come into his possession with other oddments at the forced sale of another curiosity dealer's effects. And not knowing what its value might be, he had ticketed it at 10 shillings. It had hung upon his hands at that very price for some months, and he was thinking of reducing the figure when he made a singular discovery.
Thank you for listening to this sample. To continue listening to this book and for access to all of our other full audiobooks, please subscribe for $7.77 per month. Go to adultbrain.ca or follow the link in the show notes. This will be a completely separate podcast with a new RSS feed and will have all the titles from this feed as well. Thank you for your help and support in bringing rare and forgotten books to audio for the world.